Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
3 years old, I remember being so fascinated with the fact that something that I could put on my body made me feel differently and made me feel what I at the time, I could not articulate this at all, but like in a way more confident or just like emotional or loving. And I think I've been always fascinated with objects that you can put, adorn your body with.
Hi, I'm Cami Sharia.
And I'm Monica Ainley. And you're listening to Fashion No Filter,
where we sit down with some of the lead creatives, strategic thinkers, and emerging talent around us to interpret the ins and outs of the fashion industry today.
Hey, welcome back to Fashion No Filter. I'm your host, Cami Sharia, and my co-host, Monica Ainley, is nowhere to be found today. Well, actually, that's not true. I know where she is. She's on a flight to Copenhagen because she's speaking at the Sustainability Summit. And because we really wanted to get this beautiful episode out to you that we recorded in New York last week sooner rather than later, we decided to divide and conquer and let me do the little introduction to today's guest on my own. So without further ado, let me introduce you to what's coming up on the show this week. Since launching for fall 2016, New York-based label Kite has already redefined wardrobe classics with modern appeal. We sat down with head designer Kate Holstein, who talks to us about what it really takes to launch a brand in the era of Instagram and an oversaturated market, especially when what you're creating are carefully crafted basics that won't necessarily stand out on an Instagram page.
I think I just have to go back to why I launched this. So, I've always been quite a shopper, I'm a consumer first. And I always found, I was buying all of my favorite brands, which are all of our favorite brands, I'm sure. And they're all beautiful, but I just found that the items were a bit precious, a bit cherished. I don't know, they would kind of sit in my closet and not things that I could wear 5 days in a row and not think about. Those things were things I had collected over the years, like a great cashmere sweater. My sister lived in Paris for 15 years and she had all these great cashmere just crew neck sweaters that I kind of stole from her, like a great pair of vintage Levi's that is really hard to find, or my mom's old Kelly bag. Those were the things that I would find, I wouldn't even have to think about in them when I was walking out the door, just grab them. And I started kind of talking about how, why is there not a brand that offers this to me to go and buy? Why do I have to kind of hope and pray that I will land upon these things in vintage stores or occasionally a great sweater, from a designer or whatever. So I just kind of was talking about that with zero intention of actually launching a brand. And with a push from a friend of mine, after working in fashion and design for 15 years and building a lot of other people's product lines, and I was kind of specialized in coming into brands and building product lines of not more commercial items, but I call them cherished pieces, and they tend to be kind of commercial. So everybody says essentials or basics, and I say cherished, which is a bit opposite.
Yeah.
And, who really wants to be basic and who really wants, essentials, it's a bit flat.
Yeah.
And what, with these items that are just a cashmere crew neck sweater, it's the way that the cashmere is washed, or the way that it's knitted, the way the density of it, the curve in a sleeve, it's these kind of things that people wouldn't necessarily even be able to put their finger on that make them those items that they do gravitate towards, more than maybe another one that still is the same item per se. So I've had a lot of experience in many different categories. I started my career also in having my own line, which was really small and slightly embarrassing. It was 2006 is not a good year to anybody in fashion, I'll tell you that. It was like hot pink. Like everything was like Gucci sunglasses, like Diamond G's, you know, or like 2000, that was more 2002, 2003.
Wait, and
like,
you had a brand at this time?
I had a brand at this
time.
What
was it called?
It was called Catherine Holstein. I feel like I'm already shooting myself in the foot by mentioning it on this. But, I was a junior at Parsons. I did my junior thesis. It was kind of inspired by Claire McArdle on classic American sportswear, which I've always been interested in. They were like Five Little Sailor dresses and Barney's bought it. And I kind of was thrown into having a business because I didn't even really fully realize what I was getting myself into.
Barney's bought your collection while you were still studying?
Yeah. So junior thesis. It sounds like a lot more grand than I think. Or maybe, I don't know, it's innately female to like deny yourself.
Yeah. Like, that's huge.
The old imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine. Like, that's not a big deal. Like,
yes,
you know,
it is.
I guess
really
I should
deal.
Accept it in some way, but I still feel weird accepting any sort of anything like that. Like, don't put this in here.
Because was it aesthetically very different to Kate?
In the beginning, the roots were similar because of the American sportswear factor. Like, I actually am an American. I was born here. And when I was younger, I moved to California. But when I was 9, I moved to London and lived in London until I was 17. And I was like always kind of like identity crisis, like an outsider American expat looking at America with like this kind of sense of grandeur. Like, I mean, all of American history I find fascinating. I find the correlation of, especially with female clothing, the correlation of these benchmarks in history and like the suffragette movement and what that did for women and the way that they started dressing differently while they got more independence, like really fascinating. So in a way, the roots were similar, but aesthetically it was very different. It was a little more like baby doll, a little more costumey in a way. A little, also that was kind of the times when I launched it.
Yeah.
Paris Hilton years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I'm into it.
Yeah,
I mean, bring back the simple life.
I mean, I think like people. I think that is kind of coming around again, which is the funny part. After I closed it, after 4 years, I had a good run, but I was running the whole thing by myself, and I had 40 stores worldwide at Selfridges, Isetan Japan, Lane Crawford Hong Kong, and I was just doing it all by myself from production to design, and I did shows, and it was kind of. I've looked back on it, and I'm kind of surprised. Actually, like with how that went. But I decided to close it in 2008 when the economy crashed and everybody was kind of freaking out about fashion. I haven't seen a freak out in fashion like that. I'm hoping not to see one again since.
Well, that's so interesting. We've never heard about the crisis in fashion in 2008.
Oh my gosh. What happened was is that there was so much fear and we hadn't had a crash like that. And, you know, in so long they were saying, you know, they said it was like Black Friday, like the worst, you know, since 1929. So there was so much fear around it that everybody was talking about all the stores closing, which none of them really did. Yeah. But everybody was, you know, in terms of factoring and credit and like kind of all these behind the scenes administrative things, like they were talking about taking stores credit away. So you were really shipping at your own risk. And it was just really scary.
How interesting. Because like we would have still been at university.
Yeah.
And we weren't in the industry yet, so I didn't realize it was to that extent specifically in fashion in New York.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a small independent label. Like, I think for the bigger guys, it was a bit, you know, they got through it, and for the better. I think there were a lot of designers that came up at that time that was a really interesting experience for them to come up in a time where people were saying nobody's buying expensive clothes.
Yeah.
So I closed, and at that time I went and I worked a little bit with Scott Morrison and Denim, got my feet wet there, and we spent a lot of time in Japan actually. And then I went to Gap, where I was director of knits, and learned so much there. And I chose to go to Gap because I really wanted to understand a fully vertical system on a mass consumer scale, because being independent, I wanted to like the opposite side of the spectrum. At the time, Gap was the largest fully vertical global brand. So, and Gap also is known for an incredible company culture, which I also really wanted to learn about, considering I was like always on my own. And it was an amazing experience. And it was like, it was a lot of board meeting or like boardroom meetings or like, you know, conference room meetings. I guess I wasn't on board conference room meetings, I guess I'm trying to say, but you know, it was just like complete opposite from like my more like artistic sense or experience with having my own label. And then after that, I decided to leave Gap and go be design director of Vera Wang. Beyond that, I like worked with Elder Statesman. I worked with Mayette when they launched more sustainability, understanding that a little bit better. I worked with a few other brands. And around that time, I started thinking about doing my own thing. And a friend of mine gave me a big push and really like talked me into it. I always say to him now, because it was this one dinner at Blue Ribbon Sushi 5 years ago. And it's funny because it changed both of our lives, because he, as a result, met my partner, Vanessa, and they're married and have two babies.
This is Vanessa Trainor's husband.
Is his name Charlie?
Yeah, it's Charlie.
I love Charlie. Yeah. He does that in, it's the beautiful stone. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, so it's
I love
really,
Charlie. He's amazing. He's,
I mean,
so you, so wait, at that dinner, you introduced him to Vanessa.
Not at that dinner, actually. Side note. So he was saying, you know, you're going to do this for real this time, though. Like, you're going to be business minded about it. And like, this is coming, you know, I'm all an artist first. So that was really foreign to me. And but I did, you know, get my feet wet in more kind of the merchandising side with Gap, who had more accountability for the actual business, which I found fascinating. And I also started to talk about these correlations of like all the things that I worked with or all the different brands that I worked with. It's funny how women are after the same things. And I found that was denim, cotton, and cashmere. No matter what brand you were at and what demographic.
What about dresses, though? I always hear that dresses is the big one as well.
Dresses do sell, but not in the way that... Not in the potential, in the way that...
Well, what are we all wearing right now? Denim, cotton, and cashmere.
Literally. Yeah.
And this is excluding accessories. Accessories is like a different... as well.
Right.
So that was always interesting to me, because even at Vera Wang, they wanted cashmere sweaters. You know, the buyers would come so in. Weird. So it was...
I have to be honest, when I think of Vera Wang, and I love Vera Wang, but I think of wedding dresses immediately.
Of course. You know, that's what she's famous for.
Don't you?
Yeah, same. I didn't even know.
But that's interesting that she does cashmere.
Yeah, she has sweaters.
Would you say this? One of my favorite collections, randomly, because it's more sexy than my normal aesthetic, is Alison Rarish, and this season they launched evening gowns and beautiful little sweaters and jumpers, vintage looking, and cashmere, because I think it's also, it gives a dress a softer side. Yeah. So it works really well in unison.
But so your original intention was to create the kind of thing that women would wear every day,
What I also started talking about was that there hadn't been somebody that was deeply rooted in American sportswear since Donna Karan, really. You know, it was Calvin Klein, Donna Karan, Ralph Lauren all launched in the late 60s. You know, at this point, where was the voice of my generation? I'm 35. Where was the voice of my generation that was kind of a fresh perspective on American sportswear? Because America... The history of fashion here, it really has a lot to offer as well, especially with denim, cotton, certain aspects of knit. So I really, and Jeffrey Bean and Claire McArdle and like all these incredible designers, Charles James, like I really just felt like there wasn't somebody that was kind of, I don't know if millennial is the right word. I think I'm on the cusp of that, but like, you know.
Technically millennial, I think, goes up to 37 right now.
Okay.
So we are all firmly within millennial. Yeah.
But you know, in front to Gen Z and down, I don't even know what the next one's called, but, you know, where was that voice? You know, cause Alexander Wang is incredible, super talented, but it's very specific, you know, specifically city oriented.
Urban, yeah.
So I just really felt like there was a need for that. I really didn't want to start a business exactly. Like, I just had a deep desire for these items. And so, you know, with the push of Charlie, and then I'm very close with the Trainas, have been since college, with the whole family.
Give us a little background on them, just for people who aren't necessarily familiar with like Danielle Steele, going back to the whole thing.
I mean, an amazing family, fiercely independent women, the highest taste level you could possibly imagine, from Danielle down. And just lovely, kind, wonderful people.
How did you originally get to know Vanessa Tran and the whole family?
I actually met her sister Victoria in orientation line at Parsons. So it's funny, again, like the universe has a path for everybody, I'm starting to realize, because like all of these things, you know, I was just in that one time, that one moment. There's like, you know, thousands of people registering, and we happened to be standing next to each other and started speaking. And became very close right away. And I became very close with the family. And I was actually having dinner with Victoria shortly after Charlie gave me this push. And I really started thinking about it. I made a conscious decision, like, yes, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to, and I put all my savings into it. I put everything on the line. I resigned from all my positions of consulting that I was. I made that decision that, like, okay, I have to kind of put things on the line to make this happen. Otherwise, I'm not going to really do it. Like, I really have to, like, have to risk losing everything.
It's so true, that, yeah, isn't it? To really do something, yeah, worth it. You have to take a plunge of some sort.
Yeah, like otherwise I'm going to have to like move in with my mom. You know, yeah, like, yeah, that was, yeah, like the alternative.
But it's that fear that makes you really go.
There's no other way. You know, there's no, yeah, yeah, failing. Yeah. You know? And there's failures along the way, but there's no true failing.
But also, yeah, you can never know how good something could have been if you haven't given it your all. And if, yeah, you've got your fingers, your fingers in several pies, I don't think you can necessarily like really,
yeah, yeah,
push.
Yeah. So you did it.
So I did it. And Victoria was like, you know, Vanessa's just partnered with Adam Pritzker on these, on the line. And they're looking, they have protagonists and they're like looking for other brands. Like, you should meet with her. And Victoria wrote a text message that night, met with Vanessa the following week. She loved the deck. She loved the idea. And then I met with Adam shortly thereafter, and kind of the rest is history. They decided to partner, assembled brands, decided to kind of foster the whole thing. Now we're like in a stage where we're really kind of going beyond that, but it was an amazing like kind of incubation period and a really amazing company.
But the line, I mean, for me, and I picture the apartment, which for those who don't know it is this incredible, I guess we would say concept store,
yeah,
in Soho, yeah, in
Street,
downtown,
right?
New York. Yeah. It is a sort of hub of good taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you describe it?
I think it was kind of an ode to, yeah, it's a contrast between masculine and feminine.
Yeah.
Like it was like kind of an arbiter of, or sort of this kind of Soho taste level of and artists and kind of little things that were all handpicked by Vanessa.
Interiors.
For the most part, interiors. A lot of vintage finds in, yeah, the interiors. And the whole idea of it was that it was an apartment that you could live in, and you could buy the whole thing. So it had a closet, a bedroom, a bath, and living room. And it was the first to really do that. And I think there's been a lot of people to follow.
Nodes, yeah.
It's pretty, and it's a pretty amazing, and like looking back at it now after, I think it was launched 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, it's a pretty amazing accomplishment. I almost think that the people that started it don't even realize sometimes how incredible of a store it really was. It is.
I remember being blown away the first time I mean that's how I discovered your brand, because it's the first thing I do every time I come, yeah, to New York. It's not even like I can afford most of the stuff in there, but it's just, first of all, it's like walking into someone's flat,
yeah,
and snooping around this insane, yes, place with, as we were saying, most immaculate taste.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I always find that like the things that they go and pick from the brands that I love to follow and like I can see online, it's never the same as what you find on websites,
yeah,
where things have to be sort of shouty on the screen and you think that they've picked them for that reason.
Yeah.
And you go into the line and everything is very like pared back and the colors are very simple and yet you want everything.
Yeah. Well, like Kate.
Yes, exactly. It's the perfect home for it.
I think there's just Vanessa's has a very strong point of view,
yeah,
and I think you see it, you know, mm-hmm, like right away in everything that she picks, and her whole family is like that. Very impressive taste level and everything they do. And I think being around them for so long has definitely been beneficial in my aesthetic. They've taught me a lot, and partnering with Vanessa has been amazing on this.
So I'm just going back to the things that because we've been having such an interesting conversation here that I like forgot we had prepared questions. So K-H-A-I-T-E, as pronounced the same as your name, Kate.
Yes.
But it also is taken from a Greek word.
Yes. So it's an ancient Greek word that means to have your long hair flow and to have ease and to relax. Which, when we started it, the company, I had another name originally, but we did a naming exercise, and actually, I landed upon this within like 30 minutes of researching like the Greek origins of words that we found pertain to the story we were trying to tell. So like strength, ease, fluidity. And I came across this within like 30 minutes of starting the research, and it was such an odd looking word to me, but I just saw it as Kate. I didn't even know how it was pronounced looking at it, but to me it was Kate, and it's my name obviously. And we just kept coming back. Also, I will say, huge coup to find in this day and age a one syllable word that doesn't have the .com taken, the URL taken, and also the trademarking. So that was a big thing too, to get that. But everybody was, it was controversial, I think, amongst like the group of whether it was the right name. And, I mean, it's my name, but my name's with a C, which is the funny part, because I ran away from Kate with a K my whole life. Everybody was always misspelling or like on a name tag or something, putting Kate with a K. And growing up, when I was very young, my mother, I would come home like kind of all the teachers are telling me that my name spelled with a K, and my mother would be like, do not let them tell you that.
Oh,
with a C. And that is the sophisticated way my mother would say that's not true. Audience, I'm not saying that's true.
The Kate Queens of England were with a C.
Yeah, the European way.
So I mean, it's Catherine the Great or whatever.
Catherine the Great, my mom would say, and all that crap.
So so everybody would always tell me that is not how I spell my name, and I think Kate Blanchett kind of made it more common. Yeah. So I was always running away from Kate with a K, and now I have this company that's Kate with a K. I think people still have trouble understanding the enunciation. I don't really care. Like, if people want to call it kite, I'm fine with that. If they want to call it kahate, was like a one for a while. I think that means shut up in Spanish or something like that. that was another one. So now we've moved on to kite, hearing that's the most common one.
And why do you think women love your clothes so much?
I think they're relatable. I'm one for materials. I think I'm pretty particular, and I'm a stickler for materials. And I think 80% of the appeal of a garment is material. And, people ask what's the difference between a cashmere sweater from an H&M and a cashmere sweater from, a Celine or whatever. I mean, the total opposite sides of the spectrum, fast versus luxury. And, cashmere is cashmere, but I think there's certain ways that they start washing the fibers and like that insert finishings that make it a high end yarn, but also for somebody like a Laura Piana or something. But, again, as we were discussing earlier, it's like, how dense is the knit? There's like nuance, like I prefer a fisherman rib to a 1x1 that it's a loftier, it's rounder. It's kind of like these things that the customer is like, not, a fashion researcher or history buff or like, that's somebody that does in the industry, doesn't really know why they love something so much, but they just do. Those things that they can't put their finger on, I have spent dedicated my life to researching. And it all goes back to this one moment, because clothes are a feeling. And it's a very literal feeling, because you're putting it on your actual body. So as a creative, as an art, it's the most literal to me. When I was like 3 years old, I remember my brother gave me his car suspenders, and I just thought those were the coolest things. They were also coming from my older brother, who was 5, so this was a big deal. And I put them, I was tomboy, so I was wearing like a little Lacoste shirt and like Oshkosh Bagosh over a black corduroys. I remember this so specifically. And I put the car suspenders on, and I felt amazing. And I remember being afraid of new feelings growing up, like in all aspects. I remember finding if you had a new feeling, because like when you're younger, like things are new, right. It found it very overwhelming. And like, I would be obsessive about that. Like, what is this feeling and why am I feeling this in a way that was almost disturbing, like to have new feelings. It's like, oh, whoa, like that's a new aspect of life. And at 3 years old, I remember being so fascinated with the fact that something that I could put on my body made me feel differently and made me feel what I at the time, I could not articulate this at all, but like in a way more confident or just like emotional or loving. And I think I've been always fascinated with objects that you can put, adorn your body with, and to get those feelings ever since. And like kind of figuring out what is about the item that makes you feel that way.
And the memory that's attached to it.
Yeah. Mm.
Because I think also clothes, like what you're wearing will make you remember a situation.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, people are attracted to familiarity.
Yeah.
So like, it's not surprising that everybody wears jeans and t-shirts or jeans and sweaters or, you know, like it's like, and I think going back to the question of like, what do you think it is that attracts women to your clothes? It's like, it's the familiarity. It's the nostalgia, you know, but that's easier said than done, because I think there are a lot of people that do that, but it is these little things that make them something, you know, like, you know, even for how, like what the circumference of a jean opening on the leg is, or, you know, it's just like those things, like how, like it's called grinding. And when they sand the jeans in the process, but like, you know, how the grinding is on the edge, like all these little things that make up like why you're attracted to it.
I'm coveting your jeans.
Thank you. These are the Kyles. They're available on Kate.com.
So a lot of women open their wardrobes every morning and think, oh God, I have nothing to wear, even though they have a lot of clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that your brand is a real example of the solution to that problem. What are the pieces that every woman needs to own to live a style, to invest in, to live a stylish and happy existence?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I think that's individual in a way. But to me, or to what we try to do for Kate, I think it's a great pair of jeans and a great cashmere sweater. Yeah. Like we call this featherweight. So this is actually...
That's literally what she's wearing right now, by the way. And it looks great.
With a deep V. I love
it. Deep V, yeah. So a camel deep V cashmere sweater, a great pair of cotton jeans. And then like a great low boot that you can run around all day in, I think are the essential, though I hate the word essential, cherished things that everybody should own. I mean, I can go further, a great leather jacket. I think somebody like a designer like Hedi Slimane has really...
Ooh, controversial.
Interesting.
Throw him in.
I was not expecting you to say that.
I love Hedi Slimane.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh, I love that.
I'm pretty vocal about it.
I get into a lot of debates about this. Why?
As a merchandising designer, he's really incredible. And you go into... I'm not saying his shows. You want about his shows, and I'm not going to give my opinion about that. But you go into a Hedi Slimane creative directed store, and I promise, and I've challenged women on this, you will want majority of what's in there. And even if you go into Celine right now on Wooster,
it
looks fantastic.
My friend Eugenie, shout out to Eugenie Trochu, is going to be so happy you said that, because she and I have been having arguments about this for the past year.
I think he's a genius. No question. It's not that. It's that he took over a brand that was like a woman designing for women at a time where like there was
a lot. Which is what you are. And there's something very quietly feminist about the way that you design, the way a Phoebe Philo designs. And for me, there's something that loudly isn't a feminist about what he put on his first Celine runway.
I agree with you. I completely appreciate your stance on that. It's like just not that for me, you know? Yeah. And also like, I think he was put in that position by the people that put him in that position. Mm. And I feel like he was very, it was to watch another designer be as persecuted as he was. I'm just going to be honest
here. No, for sure.
Like, it's a very scary thing to watch as a designer. Mm. Like, because I don't, you know, he didn't push her out. He didn't like get there and push her
out. Right.
It's not his fault. She left. She left on her own.
And
free
I think
will.
A lot of people also felt that his collection was a little bit of a middle finger to Vaccarello, who continued his aesthetic in quite a
similar way.
Right, that was the other thing that
bothered. And I think it was him coming back and saying, right, this is me. This is what, this is, I invented this silhouette. I did this. And now we can see that he's doing, it was almost like, I'm back. Just to remind everyone, this is what I do. Okay, now I've done that for one season. I'm moving into scene. And he's, now he's...
Well, because the second collection does
completely
feel
different.
Like
yeah.
And I do, you go, you know, what his tried and true, great cashmere sweater, great pair of jeans,
yeah.
great leather moto.
Yeah, true.
He really knows what people want. And he hones in on that. And I do think he is going to be very successful at Celine.
Who else's work do you really respect, either as a designer or, I don't know, artists? Who are your kind of inspirations?
I mean, so many people for so many different reasons. Dead or alive or all alive?
Oh, you dead alive?
I mean, McQueen.
Fictional?
McQueen, the heart and soul of McQueen, you know? Like, and that documentary is so incredible.
Mm.
And the showmanship. There's nobody like, or will be nobody like him. I love Dries Van Noten for the textiles and the print mixing. I love Stella McCartney for the strong femininity. I love, now I'm kind of, I'm just blanking a little bit, but Helmut, original
Anyone
Helmut
new?
Lang.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts on new. I'm very interested in the movement in New York right now. I think that Cal Slatta and the Alfars are very interesting to me.
Yeah.
I love that there's a new pulse that's like, you know, that's coming, and that there are these young people here saying, you know, we will be heard and we're not going to go down the system that is traditional, and we're not going to make traditional clothing. And I think for somebody like polar opposite as myself, I think I appreciate that. I find it really interesting. I think New York right now has a very, I'm proud to show in New York. I'm proud to be a New York brand. I think it has a very interesting stance in fashion right now. And I think it's exciting and there's a lot of opportunity. And I think we're going to see a lot of things come from New York in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Good to hear.
Bit of a renaissance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it had to happen, you know, like. It really, you know, there had to be kind of, and I'm not going to name names, but there had to be kind of this move away from, in order for that to happen. And I think it's been controversial. It's been kind of sad in some ways, but I think there's been some apologizing, I feel like, from New York brands going on for a little while. And I'm kind of like, I'm done with that. Like, I will not, you know, we're in New York. This is the best city in the world, quite frankly. And like, it's, you know, look at all the things that have spawned from here in fashion. And like, I think we should be proud and stand strong.
Is that why you decided to have your first fashion show?
It is a part of the reason. I always think it's funny. I realize things after the fact. I thought it was my duty in a way to contribute to the new voice, because I saw it coming, and or it's not like, you know, I think it was pretty obvious, but I saw this new opportunity and there is a new pulse, and I felt like it was time for Kate to kind of contribute to that. I thought, it was funny for the show. I never thought I would do a show. So I was very against it. And then it was kind of like, it just felt right. Yeah, we kind of followed our heart there.
Well, let me just cut in here for a second. Vogue called your show, US Vogue called your show exactly what a fashion show should be right now. Glamorous, yet low-key, intimate, but not prohibitively so. The clothes were beautiful and truly wearable. You are really hitting the nail on the head here. It feels like you're speaking to our souls. How do you tap into what women want, what these Vogue editors want, what Cami and I want, what, you know, women on the street want? Are you like feeling this? Do you wake up in the morning and are you like...
Yeah, because what next? If you're creating like timeless basics or cherished. No, I've got it.
Cherished.
The lingo. Obviously, like, the first few collections are going to be obvious, but then how do you keep up the momentum without sort of, because I think that's always the problem with these brands where you start these really like classic brands.
The ideas are not, that's the easy part for me. I mean, I have too many ideas all the time. So it's really about filtering is the tough part. I think people are surprised when they come and work with me, how fast I work. Always have been ever since I was younger. You know, I don't know, you know, maybe it'll be total shit. what's next? You know, like I hope not. But, I think I have to like go with my gut. I think I always say that, like, I can't, if something feels wrong about it, if it's like, even like by 1%, like I can't let it, you know, I can't let that happen. Like it has to be 100%, and that's a feeling. It's a gut feeling. I think design pours out of me. So again, it's really the editing process. I think that's like really what I have to like hone in on and be really serious about. It's really product-based, the way that I design. And then we kind of put it together as it goes.
And are your clothes intended to make any kind of statement, like environmental, political, feminist? I don't know. Like, I feel like a lot of...
I think that's up. I think as a creative, once you release into the world, some faster fashion houses have copied a lot of Kate things.
Yes.
You know, do you get offended by that? And, or like, does that make you mad? And I think once you release something, it's up to people's interpretation and up. I try to keep quite mum about any sort of statement that I'm trying to make that's personal to me. I think it's up for people to interpret themselves. Once you like release it, it's not yours anymore.
No. So, how does it feel when Michelle Obama wears one of your pieces?
I mean, how incredible. Like, what an amazing, accomplished, strong female.
Yeah.
So yes, it's the ideal person and it's very exciting. I'm going to be totally honest here. I've become a bit spoiled with, the amount of celebrities that have been wearing Kate. So it's the cachet as in the beginning of like the first time we saw people in it to now is different. But with somebody like that, it's like, wow.
Is there anybody who hasn't worn it yet that you would dream to see in it?
That question, I was like making my head blank.
You know? Sorry. I mean, does it really, how do you get any better than Michelle Obama?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like,
how can you, where do you go from there?
Ooh,
yes.
Yeah, that would be
Gloria.
Really
we know you're
amazing.
A listener.
Oh, really?
No. Well, I mean, she might
Monica,
be.
Monica, she might be.
She might
Gloria,
be.
Gloria, sorry, that was Monica. We're very happy to have you listen to the podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in again, Gloria. I was just like wondering how it must feel to wake up in the morning and know that people like Michelle Obama and it like, yeah. Do you, I mean, you completely deserve it,
oh,
but do you sometimes have to pinch yourself a little bit?
Yeah, there's like, you know, I joke around sometimes, you know, it's being a creative is hard. The feelings are fleeting and it's, you know, it's so like, there's days where I wake up and I'm like, everything I do is shit. I'm a hack. Like, when are people going to figure out? This is most days. When are people going to figure out I don't know what I'm doing? And then something like that happens and you're just like, oh, this is why I, you know, like, wow, like something, you know, I've accomplished something or like, you know, well, like that's crazy. She's so incredible and I admire her so much. And she chose to wear something that I made. So yeah, it's
and
pretty rewarding.
Who have been your mentors growing up?
Or you mean idols or mentors?
Well, I was actually wondering like who kind of nurtured this. So like my grandmother was the person who helped me discover fashion. Were you just kind of like...
I mean, it's funny for me. My mother is incredibly stylish and very particular. So I was very, I admired her very much. Very beautiful and strong. And then... I was one of five and I have three brothers and I was a tomboy and I was number four and I was quiet and I'm really happy now that I was quiet amongst all these rambunctious boys because it like made me an observer and made me have to notice things like or like kind of like hone in on just being an observer, like being involved in aesthetics, just like going away for survival. And I'm also incredibly appreciative that I did not grow up in the digital age and that I had, if I wanted to entertain myself, I had to lock myself in my room and draw.
Yeah.
That's what I did all the time is I would just draw. It was a big deal. We were very spoiled kids. So everybody had a TV in their room growing up. And it was, my parents
very
were
American.
Like, throw them to the wolves. Like there's, you know, like they were kind of like, I mean, with number three, four and five, it was like, you've been through so much. You're just like, you know, give them what they want.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like the iPad.
Did your mom work?
I'm the eldest of four, and I was.
It's full time.
I was the eldest of four, and I was the TV. I was the entertainer.
Yes, Cammy used to put on performances for her siblings.
Yeah.
Wow.
But
my siblings were lucky if they were even allowed in my room. I was the oldest as well.
We were very like, everybody to their rooms. Like, no, we were not the best sharers, I have to say, which is why my parents all got us our own TVs. I think they were just fed up with the fighting over like what to watch.
Their childhood is like something out of a fairy tale.
It's in Blighton. It's
mad. Like, we grew up in the countryside in France. We're just like the outside, the whole, I mean, and it's turned me into the most city girl you could imagine. She's like, she's an environmental scientist. She's have I made someone like you? And I'm like, I don't know what happened. I don't know what That's happened. Amazing. But it's funny because your upbringing has such an impact on you, and yet it doesn't necessarily mean that what you came from is what you become.
No.
Yeah.
For me, fashion was not something that I grew up with at all. And it wasn't something that I was interested in either. It's something that when I reached the age of sort of like 23, I was at uni, I was in law school, and I was interested. I was looking at other girls around me that were wearing better outfits than what I'd grown up with. And I started to think, ooh, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could develop taste. And it's something that I truly believe I built. It's not something that I was born with. And I think it's interesting that...
That's really interesting because... So part of my question when I was getting into this is like, I don't feel that it's inherited because...
Yeah.
Case point. But I do feel that it's perhaps awoken in you by a specific person.
Yeah.
Or a specific experience growing up.
But what you were saying about being observant, I think I observed a lot of people around me, and I was drawn to certain types of people, and it for everything, taste in music and taste in art.
Everything,
it all goes together, I think. And I often noticed that the people interested in interesting things were also well-dressed. And I don't know, it was like something that I sort of aspired to.
The aspiration of it, I think I was, again, once that feeling happened and wanting to seek that out, you know, with the items, but also just like admiring people around me and wanting to be, you know, wanting to emulate that. And what was that about them that made them look like that? And how could I make that about myself? I think that strive growing up, it's a blessing and a curse, you know, because I think that I can be very hard on myself in both, in many aspects as a result, but as many, many people are.
And do you use Instagram?
I do use Instagram. Ooh.
Oh, we follow each other now.
Yes.
What about me?
She started following me.
I followed her. I was like doing some research and I was like, let's find out. No, because we'd written this question. And then I was like, oh, she does.
Who do you love to follow on Instagram?
Who do I love to, oh my gosh. Again, like kind of the kind of question that makes my mind go blank.
Oh, that's, well,
I have to think about that.
Everyone should follow you because it's really fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Sometimes I think that I'm like, I can beat myself up about my stories. I'm like, that was so stupid. But I guess that's what stories is about.
I think the point of stories is for it to be disposable. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I clearly do not spend a lot of time overthinking my stories. Not especially intelligent.
So maybe let's close with a question about New York and where are your favorite places to shop or eat? I feel like... We're really tourists here, so give us some pointers, and then our listeners who are coming over or who don't know the city as well as you do might be able to try some new things.
Yeah. I think like the classic staples for eating are Raoul's, Odeon. You want to have like a real New York feeling experience there. I'm striving for like another Elaine's kind of situation. Elaine's was like this very like Woody Allen-esque restaurant that was featured in a lot of his movies that closed about 10 years ago. But it was like a very like screenwriter intellectual hangout uptown. And I feel like there's like that feeling of New York that we need again. Like Raoul's hat does that. There's a restaurant called Mimi that's really wonderful. And on Sullivan Street that I highly suggest, there's a restaurant called King that's all female run also. So delicious and amazing in every way. That's on King Street. I'm a big Blue Ribbon Sushi fan. I feel like that's the best sushi.
Which is where you had that fateful conversation.
I love
Blue Ribbon Sushi.
Blue Ribbon Sushi
I really want to go there right now.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can maybe go after.
It's actually great for lunch.
I always go for lunch.
Yeah.
Where do you take in art?
Where do I take in art? Oh, I think I just Well, Freeze is going on. So,
Freeze!
So there's, and then there's the Park Avenue Armory show and David's Warner, Pace Gallery, of course, the Met Brower and Whitney. Whitney, if you can stand the lines, really, because it's just crazy there. Over there. And Guggenheim always have incredible shows. I have to say, I've been neglectful for the last couple months in seeing. I think the last thing I saw was Lisa Yuskovash at David's Warner. So I've been a little bit behind. I've been traveling a lot. So I've kind of been.
Italy, it's fine. We'll forgive you. On the culture front.
Every street corner is art in Italy. Yeah, so I think you're...
Same here.
Yeah. True. First time I came here,
I thought I was going to find it, like, you know, too big. And I was blown away by how beautiful it was. When you've never been, I just think you imagine it.
It awakens, like, this whole feeling.
Yeah.
It's a whole different... I feel different here than anywhere else in the entire world.
Yeah, I don't want to leave. Yeah.
It's not that I'm not saying I like it better than Paris, but I like it as much in a totally different way.
I feel like, I'm a bit of a recluser, I guess, or whatever you would call it. So I find you can really, like, be independent here and still feel like you're amongst, like, people and amongst the world and, like, kind of do your own thing. I don't think that of many cities. I think you have to immerse in a lot of cities.
Yeah, that's a great way of defining it.
Yeah.
That's
what I love about it.
Yeah, you can be really individual, but you're in, like, this crowd full of energy at all times.
It's an interesting place. I mean, everybody that comes to New York is seeking something, you know? Like, that's why you come here. And I think that's different from a lot of cities, too. And I think that's what brings people together here. But in that is, like, commitment phobes are... everywhere here, no, me being one of them.
Well,
like,
I set foot off the plane and I was like,
maybe it's time to move to New York. And I'm not lying. I actually genuinely, like, since I've got here, I felt like so amazing. Well, I don't want to go home. I just extended my trip by 8 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I every time I come here, I don't want to leave. I also don't really, it's because I'm in my 30s now. If I'd made the move when I was a bit younger, I wouldn't have thought about it. But I feel like I also, like, need to slow down, and I don't think New York is the place where you do.
Actually, though, I think that you can live. I don't think that people party with as much disregard for their bodies in New York as they do in London, to be honest with you.
London is terrifying. I can't cope with, like,
What I love, though, is the British mentality of, like,
and the eccentricity and everything, and it makes for amazing, amazing party scene, very esoteric social scene and all that stuff. But honestly, I think that there's almost a healthier lifestyle here than in London.
Well, now it's also the fitness craze.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a bit like LA. Like, it's like everything is about, it's more important for you to, like, go to your SoulCycle or your Barry's than, like, where you're hanging out at night. And it's funny, that happened to me for the first time where somebody asked me, like, one of the first questions when I met them was like, so what do you do for working out? And I was like, is this, like, the new, like, what do you do for a living?
What do you do for working out?
Oh, well, okay, so now we're, like, clear the way. Like, I can talk about this forever because I am the most insanely massive SoulCycle fanatic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I go every day.
I would never have guessed.
SoulCycle, I love you. And in fact, I feel like I should, like, write them love letters, and, like, I feel like I couldn't do Kate without SoulCycle. Oh my God, SoulCycle is incredible.
It's so funny. I don't like the cycling stuff at all.
I was so bad, I cried.
I love exercising, but that is, like, not my thing
at
all.
For me, it's, like, meditative. Like, we have to, like, hone in on the teachers that cater to, like, what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But I go every day.
Wow.
Yeah. I just went before I came here. I love it. Like, I live for it. Like, I, like, have, like, weird dreams about, like, going and working behind the front desk. Like, I, like, actually might do that one day.
We thought she was dreaming of cashmere sweaters, but in fact, she's dreaming about sweating and cycling.
mentally, what it's done for me has been incredible. So, I like, have, like, nothing but amazing things to say about SoulCycle.
Amazing.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
Well, thank you
so
much.
Well, that is one last great New York tip.
Book ourselves a class. Try again in the city.
Maybe that's a challenge for ourselves while we're here, Monica.
Maybe we should go tomorrow morning.
Team bonding. Parker in Soho tomorrow morning at 10:45. Okay. It's not waitlisted.
Challenge accepted.
Writing it down. Parker and
that's
Soho.
Like really, it's an easy class, actually. I mean, sorry, Parker. Not easy. But it's like less intensive than
we need
physically.
Easy.
Than,
easy is good for
but it's he's the best with music. His music is incredible.
Well, that makes all the difference. Yeah. In any class, my Pilates teacher, Judy Pujol-Benoit, we love, plays these like 90s remix old school playlists, and it makes me so happy, even though I'm in massive amounts of pain.
No, Parker will play like, he'll go from anything from like Nirvana to like then like Lil Wayne, and then he'll go into like the Drive soundtrack, or like, you know, like
the Drive soundtrack is one of the best soundtracks
and he plays
ever
it quite to be made. And then he'll go into Nine Inch Nails, like it's incredible, like he's so good.
Okay, I love him.
Yeah, he's really good.
Maybe we should go to
cool.
Well, on that note,
thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
So fun.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, there you have her, folks. Kate, thank you so much for coming on the pod. I've always felt like there had to be an amazing woman behind such a unique and quietly brilliant brand as Kate. And I'm so happy my suspicions, well, our suspicions, have been confirmed. Thanks for tuning in. And guys, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Rate and review. It might not seem like it makes any difference, but for us, it really actually does. Until next time, Fashion No Filterites. Bye-bye.